This podcast is sponsored in part by Cumulus Networks. Cumulus Networks helps you build an efficient, affordable data center network using web-scale principles. With the Cumulus Linux operating system, you can use any bare metal switch and any app to automate, operate, and scale your business. Get more information at cumulusnetworks.com.
Today on Packet Pushers, a shiny new design and build show. We're going to talk about salt. Salt. That's, you know, it's like a table thing, right? Well, that's not what we're talking about today. Salt, in this context, does a lot of things. And our use case today is that of a network orchestration tool. And our guests today are Seth House and Mirsha Ulanik. And he's already told me I'm going to get it wrong, so I'm not even going to try to get his name pronounced correctly. But this started because I was reading on Mirsha's blog, Random Packets. He's written about salt quite a bit at his blog there, and really piqued my interest in its use, salt's use as a network orchestration tool. Seth first contributed to the Salt project 6 years ago and has worked for Salt Stack, the company that backs Salt, for 5 years. And he's worked on the core of Salt, on professional services and training, and he now works in the enterprise product team. And starting with you, Mirsha, welcome to Packet Pushers. In a sentence or two, would you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, thank you for having me here. My name is pronounced Mircha, like Mir and Cha, like in, you know, the dance, Cha-Cha. Mm-hmm. I work as a network engineer for Cloudflare, where I have the chance to automate one of the biggest global networks. I'm also a very active contributor to the Salt Open project, and I'm also an OpenConfig representative.
Wonderful. And Seth, same to you. Just a sentence or two. Would you introduce yourself?
Hi. Thanks for having me. Seth House. I've been a Salt enthusiast for quite a while, and I met Mircha through his contributions to Salt. He was doing some really interesting work there, and he was kind enough to invite me on to help out.
Great. Well, thanks to both of you for being on the show today. And this is the Design and Build show, so there's going to be a lot of questions and answers, folks. The idea is for you as a network engineer to listen to this show and walk away with a fairly good idea of what you would need to do in your environment to make Salt work for you. Now, some homework that you might want to do before you even listen to this show. If you are not aware, Ivan Pepelniak has a podcast called Software Gone Wild. And in episode 77, there is a show there on Salt. So if you want to hear a nuts and bolts discussion of the components of Salt, how it moves data around, how it talks to network devices, I strongly recommend that you go listen to that. We're going to cover some of those details here, but not all of it. My goal here wasn't to recreate that show that these guys recorded with Yvonne on Software Gone Wild, but to kind of, you know, give us an architectural discussion. So, you know, we will cover some of those concepts, but now our focus is really design and build. But a few level setting questions first. Seth, maybe this is a good one for you. Could you explain the difference between network orchestration and automation, and then how you see Salt fitting in?
Salt integrates with third-party tooling, external tooling, as part of its bread and butter. And so if there's a wonderful networking tool out there, like Napalm, then we want to integrate that with that as best as possible. And so that's the work that the Mirch has been involved with. As for orchestration and automation, I'll actually defer to Mircha on that one.
Yeah. Specifically for network automation, mostly it refers to configuration management. At the very basis, you have a template, you render it, and you load the result on the device. Looking at it as a concept is pretty much that's it. And most of the time, you will do this executing a command, like from our friends that are using Ansible. You will go type on the CLI, and you'll run a playbook, right? So basically, you have replaced a manual task with another manual task. Instead of doing, like on Juniper, you do set system NTP peer 1234, you would do playbook add myntppeer.yaml. Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds to me like a pseudo-automated task. Now, event-driven automation is the next step. You teach your system to listen to events, and it knows by itself when to go and apply the changes. The system will be intelligent enough to say, oh, that bitch variable went down. Okay, I'm going to apply these changes. These changes depending, of course, on the business logic you want. And at the end, it will eventually send you an email or a Slack notification telling you, hey, you had the BGP enabled down, but don't worry about it. I handle it. You can sit back and enjoy. Moving further, we can correlate these events and orchestrate, so you can, your network will act as a wall. For example, a DNS change is propagated everywhere, or if you change or configure a static LSPs for MPLS, you need to make sure that the eventual configuration changes are applied synchronized or multiple devices at a time. Otherwise, you may break your environment, and so on.
So it's more about, it's not simply using a different tool to push a config, which is what you were saying, fire up the playbook, in Ansible and push that config out. It's doing the same thing in a different way. It's more about, the intelligence behind it and the thoughts that go into what should this network configuration look like based on some set of circumstances.
Yes, exactly. Basically, it's next step. It also applies configuration changes, but you can tell it when to apply it by itself.
Got it. Okay. So this brings us to an interesting question, the term state. When we talk about state and network state, what does that mean generally? And what does state mean to SALT? I think, Seth, that's a good one for you.
This is a term that that the guy who wrote SALT, Thomas Hatch, was fond of. He differentiates state from flow. So state is enforcing a configuration over time, whereas flow is a one-off. It's running a command, grabbing the result, and that's the end of it. Whereas state is, defining some configuration to say, this is what this device or this system should look like over time. If it ever gets out of sync, do all of the steps necessary to bring it back into sync.
Got it. Okay. And then one last level-setting question before we start getting into architecture. There is SALT, and then there was also SALT Stack. Can we distinguish between the two of those?
Yeah, SALT is the open-source project. It's Apache 2 licensed on GitHub. It's been around for 6.5 years, I guess. And SALT Stack is the company that formed around that about 1.5 years after it was first written. And SALT Stack, the company, provides support, services, training, and we have an enterprise product that we're working on as well. So SALT Stack is the support network around SALT.
Got it. Okay, so now let's move on to design and build. If I want to work with SALT to impact my network architecture, what is that going to look like? And so let's start right at the beginning, Seth. Where do I get SALT?
So the best place to get SALT is by going to our documentation page. It's docs.saltstack.com. And from there, there's a link to install SALT, and that has links and to all of our repos for the various platforms that we support, as well as instructions and that sort of thing. So our official repos are the best place to get it.
Got it. Okay. And then, Mircea, what platforms does SALT run on?
Well, SALT is supported on many platforms. You can run it on Debian, Ubuntu, Red Hat, CentOS, Fedora, macOS, or even Raspbian or Windows. But if you ask from a network automation coverage, the capabilities depend on the underneath library. We'll see in a couple of minutes, maybe, if you will ask. So, for example, if I'm using a open source library called Napalm, which covers operating systems such as JunoS, Cisco IIS, NXOS, iOS XR, Arista EOS, Palo Alto, and others. But there's also integration of the Cisco Network Services Orchestrator that has actually an impressive coverage, but that has the major drawback that is a proprietary solution.
Okay. Now, you, when we were talking about platforms there, you mentioned a whole bunch of different Linux distributions, and then you also mentioned macOS, which is more or less Unix variant. You did mention Windows as well. Is there a specific Linux distribution that's like a favored? You want to minimize the number of challenges you'll have getting SALT up and running, and so go with Ubuntu or something like that.
I'd say we are very well supported on the usuals. So SUSE, of course, as well as RHEL, CentOS, of course, and Ubuntu.
Okay. All right. There's many components to SALT. There's a lot of pieces and parts that make up a SALT system. So let's talk through all of those, Seth. What those pieces and parts are.
Yeah. So to get started with Salt, you install the Salt Master and you start the Master Daemon. You install the Minion and start the Minion Daemon. You have to tell the Minion where the Master is. The Minion connects to the Master, which means firewalling is a lot easier. You just have to worry about the Master and not all of the individual Minions spread across your infrastructure. So
just pausing there. I mean, a Master sounds like a center point of communication, and then Minions sound like they are endpoints, almost like an agent.
Exactly right. So it's going to be an agent on each system, connecting to that central service.
Okay, and then what other pieces and parts have we got?
So with those Masters and Minion in place, what you have is a really generic high-speed communication bus. So you can push messages across that from the Master or the Minions to do a variety of things. In addition to those moving pieces, we've got some that Mirtra can talk to on the networking side. But then in addition to that, we've got a really robust plugin system. So Salt as a philosophy likes to integrate with everything, as I've already alluded to, and we take that very seriously. We try to integrate with everything, and so we can talk about getting information into Salt from data stores or out of Salt into data stores or other services or other tools and that sort of thing.
Mirka, before we get into that, Seth, you mentioned the concept of a message bus between Master and Minions. So that's kind of powerful because it implies to me, again, a pluggable architecture, which I guess you're saying is really what's there, in the sense that you want to be able to talk to anything. So it's all about that message bus?
Yeah, that's well said. It's exactly right. So that message bus is very generic, and we can use that for command and control. Run a command on these systems and get a result back. We can use it to enforce state over time. We can use it for real-time notifications. If somebody logs into the system, send a notification to our Slack channel or that sort of thing. And these pluggable systems in Salt can tie into that, just by writing a line or two of Python. So it really is a generic interface that we use for everything.
Okay. All right. So we've got Masters. We've got Minions. What other pieces and parts have we got, Mircea?
We can speak about proxies. As Seth said, Minions require a package called Salt Minion installed on the device. But we know very well traditional network gear does not allow installing custom software. So this is why a very smart guy from SoulStack come with a solution called Proxy Minion, which is basically a superset of the regular Minions. They leverage all capabilities, but they are flexible enough to allow the user to select a different communication channel with the remote device. This transport channel is then decided by underneath library. The proxy processes are able to run anywhere. Basically, they are virtual Minions. And I want to make here a note that there's one such process associated per device you manage. So if you want to manage 1,000 devices, you'll have 1,000 processes running.
Okay, so I think I'm getting this here. So if I'm not running a Minion on, say, a Juniper switch, I run a proxy that acts as a Minion and then proxies standard Salt communications between that network device via, could be NetConf, could be SSH, perhaps, and then formats those messages into something Salt can deal with and vice versa?
Yes, exactly. Basically, you will have a proxy process that is started, and inside the proxy process, you say, I want to use this library. And depending on the library, you will have a different transport layers. So I am using Napalm, and now in Napalm depends on the platform you want to manage. What's the communication channel, being either NetConf, either plain SSH or HTTP.
Got it. Okay. Okay. And then Seth, back to you. I know we've got even more components here. Master and Minions. We talked about proxies that are going to get us that ability to talk to whatever devices are out there that maybe can't run a native Minion. But there's also a database and message queue and so on.
Yeah. So this goes back to that pluggable collection of pluggable interfaces. So Salt was written to be fast enough to not have to rely on a database. So the workflow that I went through before is really the minimum you need to get up and running with Salt to a pretty impressive scale, in fact. But eventually you're going to have some kind of requirement where you need to store data from your systems long term, or you want some central place to manage, either secrets or configuration, that sort of thing, and you want to push that out to your minions. And so this is where that pluggable interface comes into to play. So, if you need to persist return data from all of your minions for 6 months, you can push that out to an arbitrary data store. And the modules that we have, you can see if you go to the documentation page to the module index, are many. So this goes back to us wanting to integrate with everything. So if you want to push things into Splunk or Postgres or whatever else, that is really easily done. It's usually just a configuration away. And so Salt was written to be fast enough that if there's something you want to know about your infrastructure, you just ask. You run a command, you query it live, and you get that back fast enough to not have to worry about it. But then if you have auditing or additional requirements, you can pile those on as needed. And all of those use that message queue that we've talked about already.
So fair enough. We've got a database for long-term storage. It gives us a place to put things that fit into that the kinds of things we'd need for long-term storage. Makes sense. And then that message queue is it's part of the message bus. It's going to have all of, I'm assuming, everything coming between masters and minions are going to be fed into that message queue and queue up in when they need to, because they can't be processed instantly, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's right. So we use 0MQ as the default transport. And so, if a minion has a return to deliver to a master, it'll do that. The master will pick those up off of its queue and write it to either local disk or some remote data store if you've configured it to do so. And if that master goes down, that minion will just wait for it to come back up, reconnect, and deliver those results. There's also a variety of topologies, network topologies that we can get into that Salt can use. The default is this master minion setup, and that's the most common that you'll see in the wild, and it's very, very scalable. It was written to be fast and scalable. Those were two of the main design goals getting started, but there's ways to distribute that around, and we can get to those a little bit later. We've also got an SSH transport, so if you don't need this always-on messaging bus, if you just want to send commands out on occasion, then SSH is a fine transport for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about masters and minions, and a minion sounds like an agent to me. Is that just Salt speak for an agent, or would you make a sharp delineation between what a minion is and how it behaves versus a traditional, what people would think of as an agent?
No, you're right. It is just an agent. It's a Python service that runs on the host and maintains that always-on connection.
Okay, so sizing. Let's do some sizing questions here. Let's say I've got a fairly modest network. It's got about 500 devices, Mircea, and I want to design my Salt infrastructure with the proper number of masters and minions to handle that load of managing 500 network devices. What do I need? How much resources is this going to take up?
Yeah, so I want to bring back from the previous question. As I said, there's one process per device you manage. So the setup depends very much on your environment and how many resources you have. A proxy process consumes about 40 megs of RAM. So if you want to manage 500 devices, you will need 20 gigs of RAM. And RAM right nowadays is very cheap, so this mm-hmm. shouldn't be an issue. For example, my own computer has 16 gigabytes, so I would be able to manage 400 device network from my personal computer. However, if there are any limitations, you can distribute these processes across multiple servers, and all you need to do is to make sure they can reach the master server and tell to the process the master is at this location. You only need to say to point to the right host name, and of course to be able also to access the network device. So if you can run the master on a server, 250 proxies on a different server and 250 and on a different one, and so on.
And you can just load that up whatever makes sense based on memory requirements. Is there much of a CPU load here?
No, they only require RAM, and it's not much.
Yeah, I figured. Okay, Seth, a question for you. Can I take any of these solid components and cluster them, like take a master server and, you know, cluster that? And if I can do that, under what circumstances does that make sense? Like, you know, I want redundancy, you know, my master can never go offline, or is it more about, you know, load spreading, where I want that cluster to share a bunch of requirements for me?
Yeah, we can do both, depending on your needs. So, for example, we've got a multi-master setup where you set up multiple masters in either hot-hot or failover mode. And so that's where, if you absolutely need a highly available salt master, you would set that up so that if your master goes down, you've got a hot standby, or you've got this failover. And that's a common thing. As I mentioned, if the master goes down, you know, if you need to restart the master for whatever reason, the minions are designed to reconnect and deliver whatever payload they had ready to go. So usually restarting the master is not a big deal. Highly available is a nice thing to have if you need it, but oftentimes you just don't need it. Mm-hmm. As far as load spreading, we've got another architecture called Syndic, which is a master of masters, a scenario where you, say, put a Syndic master in, you know, your East Coast data center and another one in your West Coast data center, and you connect them both back to corporate HQ using this the Syndic architecture, and that lets each data center be its own self-contained entity. You can log into each one of those masters and deal with that data center, the minions in that data center individually, or then you can log into the main one and deal with all of them as a whole.
And that really sounds like some networks of size that, well, maybe not. I mean, because you've got geography there, too. You mentioned East Coast and West Coast, and I suppose global spreading could be the same thing, where, you know, maybe you want to, you know, assign a local master geographically, and then, but then still have everything report up to a central hole.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a variety of use cases for Syndic. One of them is just logical separation. So we've got large companies that have, you know, disparate teams that use their individual masters, but then they connect back to a master of masters for, you know, that company-wide kind of overview. But that lets each team operate independently. One of my favorite examples for that is we've got a couple of customers that run cruise ships, and they keep a local master on the ship itself and connect back to the main corporate HQ whenever they have internet. And so that's kind of a fun one. Or another one is load spreading. So if you've got a large minion count, it might make sense to put all of those under a Syndic and connect that back, so that way each individual master is only dealing with a subset of the whole, and the top level master can have total visibility into everybody.
Huh. Okay, so really, you've got the whole thing here. Whether you've got a geographical issue, whether you've got a load issue, we've got options here to spread load around, you know, in an appropriate place. That sounds good. That sounds real good. Okay, Mircea, a question for you. Yes. I'm building this out, am I smart to have a dedicated, like, master server and maybe a dedicated database server and, I don't know, maybe a dedicated message log server, these kind of things? Or do you more typically load it all into one box and just, you know, queue up all the daemons there?
It depends. Now, for the master, you don't. I wouldn't say you need a dedicated server only for this, but you can. Of course, it would be cleaner. It may be a good practice. But you can even have any other processes running on that box. They won't interact at all. I would say to have the dedicated box only for Salt staff and not interact with any other processes. And the same with databases and so on. Or a message log server with Salt, you can have logs in a file, but you can also send them over this different log server.
Guys, just want to pause for a second and let you know that there are massive thunderstorms rolling through my area right now. So if I fall off the network because of a close by lightning strike, I apologize. And as soon as I can get back online, I'll ping you.
Have fun.
That's possible. I mean, I'm hearing thunder coming, and I've already had a really big rainstorm came through just a bit ago. All right. Let's go back here. So this one's for Seth. Okay, 3, 2. So, Seth, I love learning from other people's mistakes, and I'm wondering if you've heard of some SALT architectures, you know, or you've seen some customers build that it just kind of made you want to run away screaming, that you could yeah. share that would help people know what not to do.
Yeah. One of the fun things about being on the professional services team is seeing how people use SALT. But then, you know, there's the opposite, like you mentioned. So one of the things with SALT is because it's so open-ended, because it is such a free-form system, you know, it's certainly got prescribed usage, out-of-the-box usage. But because you can do so many things with it, chances are if you know a little Python, you're going to want to write a little Python. And it's easy to get yourself in trouble doing that, in my experience, if... You know, if you're excited about something and you want to dive in, just be sure that you have the resources and time to be able to see that through to the end, right? Because it can do all of these things, and so it's a little easy to get into a little scope creep and maybe go off the rails a little bit. So it's worth mentioning because I've seen it more than once. You know, people that can sling Python, it's so easy to write for SALT that it's easy to get overexcited.
And then write yourself right into a corner. Got it. Okay. Mircea, question for you, dealing with my network operating systems. What, in order for my Cisco box, Arista box, Juniper box, et cetera, to be able to work with SALT, what is required of them? I mean, do I have to have like a specific set of APIs or network operating system version or, I don't know, you know, rollback features? Does it have to have netcom yeah. for, et cetera?
Yeah, putting back to my previous statement, again, the proxy is flexible enough, and the transport layer actually depends on the underneath library. So in Napalm, for example, it depends on the platform. Junos requires netconf to be enabled, indeed. iOS only needs SSH access. NXOS currently needs HTTP API to be enabled, but because many people are unable to upgrade to Nexus 7.x, this will be soon extended to provide access also over pure SSH. Then other platforms like iOS XR requires the XML agent to be enabled and so on. So it really depends on the platform and how the library that is used by the proxy requires.
Okay, and it sounds like the magic is all happening in the proxy there. So, and you've also mentioned Napalm as well. So maybe we should pause just for a second and explain yes. Napalm's role.
Napalm is an open source library. It's basically an unified API that exposes data also when retrieving operational data, but also when you load something on the device in a unified way. So, for example, you can retrieve the interface's operational data and will be exposed the same in the vendor agnostic shape. No matter if you retrieve from iOS or Junos, the output will look the same, will be the same structure of the Python object. And this Python object is then taken by SALT and exposed, and you can do whatever you need.
And again, Napalm is an independent project. It's not tied to SALT specifically. It's just being leveraged by SALT in the proxies as a way to get structured data out of these devices, whatever these network devices happen to be.
Yes, exactly. It's a totally different project. It has been integrated also in other frameworks like Ansible or StackStorm, although not in the official releases, but there are also integrations available.
Hi, it's Drew from the Packet Pushers with a brief message from today's sponsor, Cumulus Networks. Inspired by world-class data centers, Cumulus Networks helps you build an efficient, affordable data center network using web-scale principles. With Cumulus Linux, their open network operating system, you can use any bare metal switch and any app to automate, operate, and scale your business. With more than 50 compatible hardware platforms, you can choose the switch hardware based on your needs and your budget. Cumulus Linux is completely disaggregated. Unlock the stack with open architecture using a Linux operating model. Use their rich and simple command line utility for easy network configuration and operation. It makes Linux networking accessible to engineers of all backgrounds. Get more information at cumulusnetworks.com/products/cumulus-linux. And while you're there, subscribe to their blog to get technical tips and industry trends at cumulusnetworks.com/blog.
Okay, Seth, question for you. How do I interact with the SALT system once I've stood it up?
The usual way to do it is via the CLI. So you just run the salt command to send executions down to your minions, and then you'll get those results back there at the CLI. You can also log into the minion directly, and so salt is both push and pull. There's no difference between doing one versus the other. You have access to all of the same stuff, regardless of where you're coming from. So in addition to the CLI, we've got a REST API. We've got various ways to access it programmatically. There's a Python API if you're a Python programmer. And in addition, there's interfaces like scheduling jobs. So if you want to, you know, kick off our configuration management portion, you know, once every 30 minutes, that sort of thing, you just toss it into a schedule, and that schedule can run again on the master or the minion. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So programmatically, there's a lot of avenues for getting at salt.
And then is there a, you said CLI is the typical way. Is there a GUI as well? I mean, if there's an API, I'm assuming there may be a GUI?
That's right. So our enterprise product builds on top of Salt, and it includes a GUI as well as just kind of a central place to aggregate return data, as well as role-based access controls and that sort of thing. But the GUI is part of that enterprise.
Gotcha. So that's my level up. You know, I've got the open source Salt, which is primarily what we're talking about on this show, but I do have that option to level up to the enterprise flavor, and which gets me more stuff, including a GUI.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's important to note that that Salt by itself is a completely standalone product. The enterprise product that we sell builds on top of Salt and is the result of things that we saw repeated customers building for themselves internally. But as we alluded to before, if you don't have a dedicated development team, if you don't have a team that can devote resources to maintaining that kind of product, it becomes a hard thing to maintain yourself. And so our product builds that on top of Salt. And so you're not losing out on anything by not using it. You're just gaining things usually in large environments.
Got it. Mircea, out of band network, is that the way you would go for Salt, where you'd use it to manage network devices out of band, or not? I mean, sometimes that isn't practical, I guess. Just wondering what your thoughts were there.
Well, again, I think it depends very much on environment. From Salt's perspective, you only need to say, I want to manage this device, and this is the FQDN where you can find it. The rest is depends on you on how to configure your local DNS. So when you tell Salt this is the host from where to connect to the device to point to the right interface. Now I think this depends on how stable are the interfaces and how reachable you can have. If your out of band is more stable than different interface where you have a public IP address, then indeed maybe it's better to use the out of band. But otherwise, maybe I think I would prefer to have a dedicated interface.
Mm-hmm. Seth, we've talked about Salt and Salt Stack, the company behind it there. Is there a reference architecture that Salt Stack might offer for Salt where, in other words, some kind of a document that I could look at and go, oh, you're building Salt to do this for you, and so we recommend that you use, you know, a master that's configured like this, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's something that we can provide. Since Salt is kind of open-ended, as we've been discussing, you can use it in a variety of ways. So, for example, we've got customers that are only using Salt for the message bus, and they've got their own something else, you know, around that. You know, maybe they're using either Puppet or Chef for configuration management, which is not uncommon. Maybe they're using the entirety of Salt. They're using remote execution and configuration management and the live events. So you can mix and match. You don't have to use the entirety of Salt. You can integrate Salt in existing environments. And so because it is so open-ended, oftentimes it is a useful thing to reach out to our professional services team, just to ask for recommendations for common setups. We've got documents saying, this is how you would set up a highly available master. This is how you would, say, logically separate teams using Syndic, as we've discussed. So that's probably your best bet.
Okay. All right. Now, this is kind of a thought positioning question on Salt. I mean, when I get it all installed, we've talked about a lot of things here, and it's pointed at my network devices. Is it immediately doing useful things? You know, I can think of it as like this package that now it's great. I got it all installed and let's go do stuff. Or is it more like now that I've got Salt installed, now it's a framework or it's a platform, and now I'm going to tailor it to do the useful things I need in my environment?
It is both. So out of the box, it will do all of the remote execution and configuration management things that you would expect a tool like this to do. So, you know, once you've got those the master and the minion installed, you've got them talking to each other, you just run a command on your minions and you get that response back at the CLI. And we've got a huge library of what we call execution modules that facilitate that. And they run the gamut of, you know, shelling out if you need to shell out, or, you know, PowerShell if you're a Windows user. To, you know, managing MySQL, to managing, you know, things in Amazon's infrastructure with, you know, the wraps Boto and the EC2 functionality. And so there's a lot of out-of-the-box functionality for that. And then the state management builds on top of that so that it utilizes that and then can enforce that configuration over time. You'll have to write states for that part to, you know, define what you want a server to look like. But out of the box, it does those things just naturally. And then you can configure it to, you know, say... you can configure it to run, you know, checks on the system. So, you know, tell me if anybody ever logs in is this user, or tell me if anybody logs in as root, or tell me if my load or disk usage, you know, gets above a certain threshold. And so those are things that you can just configure. If you want to enable Salt Scheduler, that's, again, something that you just configure. And so out of the box, you get that functionality with a little extra configuration. You get a great deal of extra functionality. And then because it's all written in Python, because this modular interface is just a first-class interface in Salt, you can write Python if you would like to, say, customize it or build on that. That's a common thing for, say, Windows admins that you know, have a lot of PowerShell scripts that they've already got. You know, you pull those into Salt and you use those with Salt. Or if there's something you need to customize or something, you know, that is specific to your company or your workflows, adding those into Salt is usually just a drop-in. But then, of course, that's something you have to write and maintain.
Got it. Okay. This is cool. So this is, okay, what's fun about this to me is listening to this going, it's all coming together in my head, this architecture, how I would be talking to my network devices and then being able to start building, kind of some workflows and pulling information to and from the network from a central repository. This is all, certainly it's not the only tool in the world that does this kind of stuff, but this is very cool. Okay, so let's move from architecture then, where we've really talked about a lot of what it takes to get Salt up and running and interacting with my network. And now let's talk about operations. So I've got the architecture in place. It's there. What can I do with this thing? What skills am I, as a network operator, expected to have to be able to use Salt? I mean, do I have to know, like, templating or scripting or data marshalling? You know, what do I need to know, Mircea?
Okay, so this is one of my favorite subjects and one of the most beautiful things in Salt. In the very first place, one of the skills is patience and willing to read the documentation. Documentation in Salt is very, very good, and many people skip over reading documentation and rush into development. So one of the first things I recommend is take time and read documentation. Because you often find yourself reading for a few minutes and then apply simple and human readable configuration changes, and boom, you are all done. Because Salt is that kind of tool that provides you all the means to avoid reinventing the wheel, but reuse things already done by others. So for the first steps, six simple rules is all you need. Three rules for YAML and three rules for Jinja as a templating language. But there's even more. Salt is not about only YAML and Jinja, it's much more than that. It's a mixture of templating language and the data representation language, meaning that instead of YAML, if you prefer to use JSON or HJSON or a different data presentation or simple Python configuration like files, while for the templating, instead of Jinja, if you prefer Mako, or if you hand over from a different framework like Puppet, or if you want Genshi and Cheetah, and I don't know what other templates are supported. It's very easy to handle. I have referenced these skills in one of my tutorials. They are actually pointing to the SALT documentation. Moving on, you may need some trivial Python skill, but nothing advanced. SALT is linear, so in order to extend it, you don't need to dig into advanced Python classes or other very complex stuff. At most, you only need to know what is a Python function, so basically that's it.
Okay, so pretty straightforward then. Yes, some things that some network operators who've lived their life at the CLI writing configuration standards may not have, but getting familiar with some templating YAML files, Jinja, as you mentioned, and some basic Python is all straightforward enough to get you comfortable in the SALT world.
Yeah, and I'm also speaking in the name of my colleagues that were not that. Didn't have the skills, but I provided them a framework. I told them, this is what you need to do. You simply take the config you expect to be loaded on device. You apply these placeholders where you expect, where you want in the template to be replaced with the data you want. And that gave them a lot of spare time. And they used that spare time learning Python. Mm-hmm. So for the first steps, making this decision, you will firstly free yourself, and then you'd be able to start learning programming language, and in the future help back the community.
Seth, a question for you: is SALT transactional? And what I mean by that is, if I'm trying to push a complex change into the network and it breaks halfway through, does the whole thing get backed out as one big transaction?
There's two parts to this. One is SALT on regular Windows or Linux systems, and the other is on network hardware. On just regular systems, the answer is no. That's a hard problem to solve, and it's a hard problem to solve generically. So if that's a thing that you need, I'd recommend leaning on the normal OS tooling for that sort of thing. So file system snapshots and rollbacks, that sort of thing.
Okay. And then in the context of network devices, is it different?
That depends on the... Right. If the network device itself supports it, then that can be tapped into, and Mirchen can speak to that.
Yeah. Rollback. It's not necessarily a requirement, but it may turn useful. Speaking from this perspective, to be honest, I don't use it very often. Only sometimes I need to roll back a simple change, but only one step. So. In Napalm, we have some features for rollback, but there are also some platforms that do not provide something like that, and we try to emulate this saving a file on the device. But at some extent, that's not even possible. There are some devices like Pluribus, for example, that do not allow anything, and not even to save a file. So basically, that becomes impossible.
One of the things to keep in mind is SALT state system is idempotent. So you should get the same outcome if you run it over and over. So if something does go south midway through a run when the network is back or when the system's back online or whatever the hiccup was, just run it again and you'll arrive at the same outcome you would have without.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. If since we're state aware, we can still get there. It may not be via transactional or rollback model because of device limitations, but because the word you said was idempotent, we're going to end up in the place that we need to in most cases.
Exactly right. And that was one of the design goals around SALT state system, born out of frustration with some similar tools in the space. Whenever you kick off the state system, it runs in the exact same order and performs the exact same operations every single time. And it doesn't change anything unless something needs to change. So there's a pre-check. Does anything need to change? It makes the change and then it reports what it changed.
Okay. How do I monitor the health of my SALT system, Seth?
Since Salt can be used for so many different things in so many different ways, it depends on how much of Salt you're using and where. So if you're using something that is a little bit heavier on the master, you're going to want to keep an eye on certain things in the master. So for example, Pillar is a system in Salt that can generate minion-specific data that, that can be used for configuration or secrets or what have you. And so that's an operation that happens on the master. And so if you're making heavy use of Pillar, you're going to want to do the normal, monitor the CPU load and the memory pressure on that master to make sure that it's doing okay. If you're not using an external database and you've got a lot of minions, or if you run a lot of commands throughout the day, Salt stores those returns on the file system. It uses the file system as just kind of an ad hoc database. And so for that, you're going to want to keep an eye on free inodes on the system to make sure that that you've got enough. If you've got a high minion count, and this is, getting into the thousands, so the default settings in Salt will scale to thousands of minions for most use cases, just out of the box. But if you've got many thousands of minions, and, we've had customers with upwards of 10, 20, I think LinkedIn was running 40,000, last I checked, minions on a single master. And so when you get into numbers like that, you're going to want to keep an eye on when those minions are returning to the master. If they're all returning at the same time, obviously that's going to be hard on the network, and you're going to want to stagger that. And there's a document in our documentation called Using Salt at Scale that goes over some of those recommendations. But then on top of that, Salt itself uses a little bit of memory because it's Python, but otherwise isn't doing anything out of the box. It farms out heavy operations to the individual minions. They're doing most of the work, so the master is just kind of sending commands and receiving results. So based on how you're using Salt, put monitoring efforts where the action is happening.
Mircea, Salt is network configuration and orchestration. We're doing state maintenance here. Does that mean I could actually use it as a network monitoring system, or is it not really fit for that?
Yeah, you can use it also a network monitoring system. It provides all the tools for do that. There are plenty of ways to achieve this. On the first place, you need to have a tool or to provide a way that you will retrieve from all your network data in a vendor agnostic format. For example, in Napalm, we have provided features to do that for NTP synchronization or to retrieve the results or IPSLA or RPM probes. And I can give you an example. This is exactly what we are doing at Cloudflare. We monitor the backbone of our transit providers, collecting the results of these ICMP probes. When something bad happens, Salt reacts and applies the changes in such a way that our network remains stable, even when a transit provider has a massive packet loss. Hmm. We can do that very similarly.
Hmm, and, that's actually super cool. Man, that could be a show in itself, just talking through how that all works. Wow.
Yeah, it's very spectacular. We have some charts with how bad looks the internet nowadays.
Well, okay then. So, I mean, obviously you can must be able to feed a bunch of data into Salt. I mean, can I put like telemetry data, syslog data, SNMP traps, et cetera? Can I put all that sort of data into Salt and have it react to it in some way?
Yes, exactly. There are various ways. So you mentioned the telemetry, syslog, and the SNMP. So I will take them all one by one. Very simple and straightforward is like in Napalm, write a new feature that retrieves data over the API provided by the vendor. But otherwise, you can also write a simple custom execution module that is distributed to all minions and is basically a module that collects data you need via SNMP. Or telemetry is very easy to be embedded, but only a handful of devices have it right now, only new platforms and so on. But there's another nice alternative that will be available in the next release of Salt. That will be in this year, in July, I think. There's a feature called the Engine. that is listening to syslog messages, to which Salt is able to react and push configuration changes as required. For example, if synchronization with NTP peer is lost, there's a syslog message announcing this, and Salt is able to ingest this message and interpret it, and then react and push the necessary changes, and so on.
I want this. I gotta spend some time with this and make this happen. This sounds really, really powerful. Okay. Seth, I want to go back to this network state idea again, because it's a concept with network state and also network intent somewhat related. You know, these concepts are a bit abstract, and it gets, you know, when you're trying to understand what is really meant here, I mean, how much detail are we getting into when we talk about state? Now, I you know, whether that's Salt and, you know, broadly in the ecosystem, servers and whatever, or, you know, networking specifically, what are we getting into? I mean, because, so some examples. For example, I could say that I could define an exact BGP neighbor relationship between two IP addresses and two specific autonomous system numbers, and we could say that that's state, and it is state of a sort. But it could be something more abstract, where we say we want a pair of devices to exchange routes, and we don't really want to fuss about the details. We just kind of want it to happen. So what do we mean by state in the SALT context?
Yeah, there's a variety of ways to approach this. So, I mean, really, a state in SALT is anything that that meets that workflow that we've discussed with the pre-check, and then the making those changes if necessary, followed by the post-check. And so, if you can, say, write a Python module that can check to see if something is in a particular configuration, and with SALT's orchestrate system, that can even cross multiple systems. So you can say, make an execution that you know, queries this minion. And as we've talked about, SALT is fast enough. So if there's something you want to know about your infrastructure, you just ask. So you can say, query this system and query this system, and then make some determination based on there as to whether or not they're in the right configuration or not, and then, you know, affect that change. So so out of the box, you know, SALT will do all of the normal things with networking on individual systems, so configuring interfaces, setting up firewalls, that sort of thing. And then with this multi-host capability with SALT Orchestrate, you can say configure a firewall on a system and then check to see that those rules are actually in place by querying that from an external system, that sort of thing. As to, say, the BGP neighbor relationship that you're referring to, I'll defer to Mircea for that.
Yeah. As Seth said, the state enforces the configuration you want to be on the device and you expect to be. So if you don't define a specific relationship between two ASNs, when you run the state, it will be removed. If you don't provide it, the state is going to clean up. But you can provide a different way. As you have asked, if you don't want to fuss with the details, for example, you can set some defaults if you have connection details for all your neighbors. For example, you only need to say I want this neighbor, and all the other details will be inherited from your defaults, and then you don't need to define again and again the same details. But otherwise, if you don't define something, it will be removed.
Yeah, I think broadly what we're saying here is there does ultimately need to be a specific definition. Yes, we can do some inheritance and these kind of things from a general description, but, you know, we're getting into, you can't just say something very vague and expect something to happen. You need to define something more explicit that is going to be the state that is then enforced.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, someone asked a similar question some time ago. They asked me if I want to have these BGP neighbors on the device, but I don't want to define them in my source of truth. How can I run the state without removing my BGP neighbors? Well, the answer is add them in your source of truth.
Okay. Right. Okay. All right. So if I'm expecting SALT then to enforce that state, Mircea, what happens when someone goes behind Salt's back, logs into a network device directly, and monkeys around with the configuration?
Salt will come and will remove.
Okay. So Salt's going to go in and go, oh, this is no longer matching the state I expect, and therefore whatever they change is going to go back. It's going to get zeroed out. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But if you want to apply something, I don't know, if your data center is burning and you want to apply immediately something, I don't know, and you don't want to go through Salt, after you apply the changes manually, you need to update your source of truth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few ways to have Salt enforce that. So, for example, if you want Salt to trigger something automatically if somebody changes something, network device support is going to be dependent on the device. But like for systems, for example, if somebody logs in and, you know, changes a file that's being controlled by Salt, you can set up an active watcher that will send an event up to the Salt master that will then kick off a state run. To put that back into place, just the normal state run. But without that, you'll have to kick off that state system in order to see that something is out of whack and to have it put back into configuration.
Yeah, exactly. I got it. Right. So the watcher is going to allow you to bring things back into alignment more quickly because you're going to see, because the watcher's paying attention, that something's changed and, you know, enforce that state run to happen now as opposed to the state running on whatever its normally scheduled runtime is.
Exactly right. And those watchers take a variety of forms. It's one of the pluggable interfaces in Salt called beacons.
Mm, cool. Okay. Mircea, you're at Cloudflare. I know you guys are big on IPv6. How does Salt deal with a dual stack environment or maybe an IPv6 only environment?
Yes, indeed, we are dual stack. And there are no issues. Depends only in your environment to make sure that their DNS settings are correct. But in case you have a dual stack and you want Salt to not attempt any connection via IPv6, there's a simple option, the IPv6 false, and then it won't try to connect over IPv6.
So I can use Salt not only to manage IPv6 devices, or devices that have IPv6 addressing, but also I can use IPv6 as a transport for Salt for the message bus to make things happen if I want.
By default, it's using the TCP IP, so you can. This is also in your environment how you set your DNS settings. So
it's agnostic. It doesn't really care. IPv4, IPv6 is fine. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, Seth, a question for you. The world of orchestration is big and broad, and you've got systems now like Kubernetes, which has its own networking, and OpenStack, which has its own networking interfaces, at least. And does Salt interact with those sorts of orchestration systems? And how do you integrate those systems together, if that's possible?
Yeah, that's a good question. So with things like OpenStack, the answer is a little bit more straightforward. We've got cloud modules, yet another pluggable interface in Salt, as well as execution modules and state modules for querying out to OpenStack's API to, say, do VM management, you know, spinning up, spinning down, other kinds of management, configuring OpenStack itself. And so for that, we just rely on OpenStack's API to integrate Salt with OpenStack. And since that's going through our modules, we can get data into and out of there in the usual Salt ways. With things like Kubernetes, being its own kind of ecosystem and it's more or less self-contained, we don't interact quite as heavily with Kubernetes, but then Salt will sit side by side with Kubernetes just fine. So, you know, if you've got existing systems, legacy systems, that sort of thing, as well as Kubernetes systems, Salt is a good glue for, say, interacting with Kubernetes API to, say, kind of bridge that gap. So if something needs to happen inside of, you know, the sphere of influence that Kubernetes is managing, you can pull that into Salt or push that into Kubernetes from there.
No, you're saying you can. So typically, if you're trying to handle these different systems, are you the operator doing the integration, try to pull it all together, or would you look to a vendor or maybe SaltStack, the company, to do that integration for you?
Right. So If we don't have a module for it already, and you can see that by going to just the index, the module index in our documentation, then it'll require some custom glue. If there's already a module for it, then it should just work out of the box. And we've got many OpenStack modules. And off the top of my head, I think we've got one or two Kubernetes. But then, yeah, if it's not covered by the modules that ship with Salt, then you'll want to reach out to, say, our professional services team with your specific need and whatever integration you're trying to do.
Okay. Mircea, does it come up that there are times where you can't configure the network or get the network to the state that you want using Salt, and you've got to revert to, you know, the network device's CLI or the GUI instead to get something done?
Well, for configuration management, theoretically, you will won't ever need anything like that. At most, you only need to write a template. Now, I have some experience working with the XML agent on iOS XR. So that being the interface between the library, or better said, between Salt and the remote network gear. The XML agent runs on iOS XR devices from Cisco. I have seen many times when basically you can't remove an entity and the device throws back an error message saying a pseudo-atomic error occurred, I don't know where. But at the same time, I was not able to do this even from the CLI, or sometimes I was not able to commit. We weren't able to commit on a device for 2 days or so, or whatever issue. So no, as long as you can apply some changes from the CLI, at least you'll be able also to apply them through Salt.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that you'd almost, really, because of that state enforcement, you wouldn't want to be in a position where you're trying to do something at the CLI, because then you're getting away from the state and you're going to be in that, you know, that state enforcement run is going to happen and clobber the change you made anyway. So you're really in a situation of you need to make Salt be able to do this, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
From a different position of when you need to retrieve operational data, well, there are still many things in the network world that need to be sorted out beforehand. In a worst case, you'll need to write some Python code to fetch the data you need. I have also some good news. There's a community effort nowadays exactly in this direction. A new library called Napalm Young, created by David Barroso, whose goal is to transform vendor-specific data representation into vendor-agnostic data structured following the Young models, those being those provided by IETF, either OpenConfig.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really good, because it gives us a standard way in which to present structured data coming from devices. So that's you said that's the Napalm Yang project that David Barroso is working on. Okay.
Yes. Exactly. Salt will be the very first automation framework that will have these capabilities enabled by default, and then you can structure your pillar, that it being your source of truth, exactly as the Young model says, you are free to use it. But
well, I'm just laughing because we've been waiting for vendors to support some set of standard Young models, and it's just taken forever, and that's not really happening. And unless they're open people that are part of the OpenConfig group that they're buying from, then they seem driven enough to make it happen. And so, if the user community takes it in their own hands and figures out how to present structured data in a Young standard model, that's pretty compelling. That's really interesting.
Yes, exactly. We are very positive on this, and we believe that this is the way to go. And we already made more progress than other vendors did. And we started, David started this just a couple of months ago. And I want to insist that this is a community effort, and everyone is all welcome to use. But there's still a lot of things to be added, and it's very important to contribute back and help others.
Okay, Seth, network tools like this have a long history and a variety of capabilities and so on. And many network engineers have got this memory of, we spent all this money on this tool and we set up to do this thing and something went sideways and all of a sudden we had, you know, hundreds of devices that were configured wrong. So we kind of failed at scale, if you will, and you know, blew something up because the orchestration tool went off on its own. If I misuse Salt, is that a possibility, something I need to be concerned about?
Yeah, it's definitely something that everybody needs to be concerned about. You know, using Salt, it is a powerful open-ended tool, needs to be done with the care that such a tool, you know, kind of requires. So that means things like oftentimes, as you guys were just talking about, the best way to send something out is to write it up using Salt state system. So, you know, if you've got, you know, many thousands of minions, you're probably not going to want to shell out and run, you know, arbitrary commands just on all of them all at the same time. You're going to want to, you know, at the very least stage that out. So, you know, test it on a couple of servers before, you know, moving on to the rest. But better yet, don't do that at all, right? So, code up, you know, whatever change you need to make into Salt's state system so that goes through all of the normal, you know, maybe you're using GitHub and pull requests and, you know, somebody reviews your changes and then that gets merged in and then deployed out, kind of a thing. And then on top of that, there's certain things and certain situations that you're probably going to want to either turn off or blacklist. So, you know, you might want to disable the ability to shell out, you know, just from the CLI on all of your minions simultaneously. You're going to want to set up, you know, users for your team so that certain people have access to certain sandboxes. And then you're going to want to do things like staged rollouts. So you're going to want to test something on a subset of your servers, you know, incrementally over time and just kind of listen for errors. So all of those things are built into Salt, and all of those things are definitely something you're going to want to watch out for if you've got a large infrastructure, or so, if you don't, actually.
Yeah. Any size network needs to be concerned about these kind of things. Can I... You just got my brain spinning on like limiting what an individual can do, which is something in the networking world we would call RBAC, role-based access control, where I can say, oh, you're an operator and have, you know, limited privileges. You're an engineer and have more privileges, or... et cetera. Do we have a concept like that in Salt where, you know, you authenticate to the system and then you're assigned certain rights of what you're allowed to do in the system?
Yeah, Salt has an access control list as well as an external authentication system. There's two systems, depending on whether or not you want users logging into the master as their own users, or if you want them, say, authenticating against an external service like, you know, Stormpath or something like that. But, you know, if you can log into the box, you probably want to use the ACL system, and that gives you control over what users can do what. You know, what users can use which modules, or what users have access to what we call them targets in Salt, but essentially what systems you can affect.
There's also auditing, I assume, so I can tell what the malicious person did.
Absolutely, yeah. So in large or in significant infrastructures, oftentimes you'll have Salt logging those job returns to some central store that, you know, you maintain for a significant period of time. You know, maybe that's just syslog or something like Sumo Logic or something like that. So those job returns will get logged to the system, so you can see what changes were made to the systems, what those changes were, when they were made, and who they were made by.
Okay. Okay, Mirsha, kind of a related question. When Salt connects to a network device, what credentials does it use? Or what, I mean, is there like a recommended, based on your experience, that you would offer to folks? I mean, is there a, like, should it be the person that's logged into the Salt system that's, you know, then sending queries effectively through the proxy and then down to the system? Or is there like a Salt services account that gets used, something like that?
Well, when a process is started, it opens the connection with the remote device and will maintain it, this connection alive as long as the process is running. And that means you need a dedicated account. So what I recommend is you have the connection details in something called Pillar, that is the source of truth. Well, you definitely want these credentials to be secured. What I want to recommend is either encrypt the at least the password, if not also the username and other fields, with using GPG, and Salt will decrypt it on the fly. But also you can externalize this source of truth data in different services like Vault or, I don't know, a database that is secured with a password and so on.
Okay, it's pretty straightforward. Then it sounds like a lot of other systems along the way where you've got a systems account for when a remote process is going to log in, and then you've got a human account, you know, tied to the person that's kicking off things. So that it seems familiar to other work that's out there. Seth, talk to me for a minute about community. You know, so two ways. So is there a community that I can go to for help? And then also, let's say I've done something amazing with Salt and I just want to share it with the world. It's like a platform. I presume maybe that same community I'd go to for help that I could also share my, you know, tool or success story, whatever, with.
Yeah, you bet. So there's a mailing list, Salt users on Google Groups, and you can get to all of this from our documentation. That's a great resource. A lot of people are happy to reply with good ideas. We've got an IRC channel, Pound Salt, on Freenode. Those are the two that we've got SaltStack employees maintaining, or keeping an eye on. There's other resources as well. The Network to Code Slack is very active. If you've got networking specific stuff, and then you know, if you make something and you want to show that to people, oftentimes the best way to do that is, you know, if it's a state, we've got a SaltStack formulas organization on GitHub that collects states that, you know, have related purposes. We've got a repository in the SaltStack organization for modules that maybe you're not ready for prime time, but you're just kind of interested in them, and you want to, you know, start a dialogue. But if it's something that you've been using and it's something that that, you know, has broad appeal, we've got a very open-ended contribution policy in Salt. So chances are we're going to want that in core, and chances are it's going to be easy to get into core. So modules, you know, they go through this defined interface in Salt that we've been discussing, and so, you know, one module cannot affect another module, and so we can get that in generally really quickly.
Yeah. If I can add anything here, I would also encourage to go and speak at different conferences and share your experience, like others did already. Or also blog post with detailed steps so other people can follow and reproduce.
Okay, folks, so if you're listening this deep, you're 70-plus minutes into listening to us design and build Salt for network orchestration. We've talked through the architecture. We've talked through a lot of operational issues. And now we're going to do a little bit about troubleshooting. What happens when things break? Because things always break. And Seth, let's start with you. Let's say my database server crashed. Now, early on, we were talking about the database server component of Salt. You were mentioning a lot of things get done without a database server. They just kind of work its way through the message queue, and you know, the database ends up being a, you know, long-term storage. So if I lose that server, what happens?
Right. Well, if that is your source of truth, if that's, you know, where you're keeping everything, you're going to want to you know, put the usual redundancy around that. Now you can do that using you know, whatever the norm is for that database server, or you can have Salt say send that to multiple places. So the way that you get data out of Salt that we've been alluding to is called returners. It's a module interface in Salt, and you can have more than one returner that gets executed when job returns roll in or when events roll in. So, for example, if you've got you know, something that you're using for auditing, a data store that you're using for auditing, you can use that in conjunction with something that you're using to process logs or that sort of thing. By default, the Salt master will only hang on to job returns for 24 hours. And so if you want something longer term than that, you're going to want to use these returners, and then they can be used in conjunction or multiple at a time to do whatever it is you need to do.
All right. And then how about the message queue? Because that seems pretty critical. You know, the message bus is passing messages back and forth between masters and minions, proxies, et cetera. And there's going to be times where I've got to queue up some messages. Let's say that queue dies, or is that even a valid concept?
Sure, yeah. If you know, if you restart the master, or if the master goes down for whatever reason, if a minion was in the middle of delivering a message, it'll just wait for the master to come back up, and then it will deliver that message when the master comes up. If you're using the returner interface, then it doesn't matter if the master is up or down. So, you know, if the minion's got some kind of job return to deliver, it'll send it off to Sumo Logic or Syslog or whatever, you know, however you've got it configured, independent of the master. And so that's one of the nice things about the minions being kind of independent agents in that regard. But then, so restarting the master is generally not a problem because of this this reconnect behavior. But then, say one of the minions goes down when you send out a salt command, and you wanted that minion to pick up that command. This is where the idempotent nature of salt states comes into play. So when that minion comes up, you can either have it configured to, you know, configure itself automatically every time it starts, or just the next time it gets a command from the salt master, it will then put itself into the right state, and it doesn't matter that it missed that initial command from the master. And that's also a good reason to avoid the flow that we've been talking about to configure your systems. You don't want to do a one-off. You want to write that up in a config file and enforce that over time.
Yeah, I like the... It doesn't all have to be real time. You know, it's not as if you're immediately impacted in your network forwarding or anything because salt's having a problem. You're not. You're temporarily impacted, potentially, in your ability to cause a change, or to, you know, to bring a change about while you're restarting the master or whatever it is. But that's a very temporary situation, one that's recovered from pretty elegantly for the most part, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's well said. And and you know, if the master's down for an extended period of time, you've also got fallbacks, like, you know, using something like Salt SSH to call into that system using the SSH transport. And the nice thing about Salt SSH is it uses all of the same machinery that regular Salt does, and so switching between the two is fairly seamless, even though the workflow is very different, where the master is now doing a bunch of stuff and pushing that to the minion, but the interface is the same. So if you've got states configured, you can push those over with SSH and have it work just the same.
Okay. Here's one for you, Mircea. If I can't talk to one of my network devices, how do I troubleshoot that? Or let's be more pointed. Let's say Salt is having difficulty communicating with one of those network devices, but yet it's there. I mean, it's online and it's forwarding. How do I deal with that situation?
First up is to stop your proxy process and restart it in debug mode. The logs are verbose enough that will tell you exactly where it stops and what's the issue. Most of the time, from experience, when people asked, was just because the hostname was improperly configured, or simply they couldn't access the device because netconf was not turned on, or the corresponding feature for the API was not enabled, and so on. But starting the proxy process in debug mode will usually give you all the information you need.
Now, there's debug logs and there's debug logs, Mircea. So how easy is it for me to parse these if I turn that on the proxy to see what the issue is?
It's pretty easy, actually. I didn't see anyone complaining that didn't understand, because it says that I'm not able, and the proxy is stopped, and the proxy process stopped because of this.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, one last troubleshooting question. Let's say I've got I'm CPU bound. I've maxed out my CPU for some reason. The master, maybe it's a minion or a proxy, is maxed out. Why might that happen? Have you ever run into that before?
No, to be honest, I've been using Salt with proxy minions for 1 year and a half, and I didn't see anything like that. But you know, it's software, and anything can happen. And what I recommend is to restart the process in debug mode, the process that is causing this, and collect data and report it to the Salt community. And people there will ask more information, or maybe will be able to identify the cause straight away.
All right, well, let's close the show with some inspirational stories. We all want, we've all been kind of, you know, heads down and, you know, hitting it pretty hard here with how Salt works and what it does. So let's leave on a high note and a bit of, inspiration. Now, you're at Cloudflare. You guys are pretty public about a lot of what you do, Mircea. Can you talk a bit more about what exactly you've done with Salt within Cloudflare, maybe some success stories?
I'm fine speaking about what we do at Cloudflare. I have reminded a few questions back how we monitor the internet and react to whenever a transit decides to drop our packets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be surprised how bad and unstable is the internet nowadays. But using Salt, we managed to take real-time decision and reroute the traffic. These decisions are usually taken in tens of places, and a human being wouldn't be able to take the right decision in a short amount of time. That means if you will let a human being decide would make you will leave your customers impacted by this. In October last year, I checked and I learned that only for this thing, or reaction when the transit providers have a packet loss, we apply about 120 configuration changes per day. Now we react to many more factors, and I'm pretty sure the amount of automatic configuration changes is more than 200 every single day.
Because you're reacting to the state of the network and the state of whatever's happening in your network, and then using logic that you've built into Salt, you're changing the state of the network in reaction to what the network is actually doing.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. That's you just said a lot there. I mean, seriously, that is an enormous to be able to leverage the system to do that. That's a very big deal.
Yeah. About success stories, there are a few other networks adopting Salt, but I won't speak for themselves because they never put it publicly. But I know there are two other networks that are much bigger than ours. But they didn't make anything public yet. But the guys from Comcast did. They had a talk at Nanook 69 where they concluded that they have migrated from a combination of Puppet and Ansible to Salt, where they say they found all the benefits from the previous tools and much more.
Hmm. Well, now, okay, but doing... taking information in from your network and then reacting to it with logic that you've programmed is a pretty advanced sort of configuration. Maybe we should also have some like smaller, like little bite-sized examples of useful things people could do with Salt to help get them started so that they don't feel like they gotta put in a whole bunch of fancy coding to make really cool things happen. Maybe some simple things that would be big wins for folks.
Yeah, that's a great thing to talk about, because one of the things we don't spend enough time in our documentation doing, in my opinion, is just talking about how easy it is to get up and running with Salt. That's how I got started with Salt, and we hear this story over and over in the community is I was looking into one of our competitors at the time, and I was 2 days into the tutorials. I had no idea what I was doing. I heard a little presentation on Salt for an hour, and so I sat down and I played with it, and I was up and running in minutes. Right, I was working. I had something working, and to get started with Salt, it really is as simple as you install the Salt package on the master and the minion. You tell the minion where the master is. You start up both of the daemons, you accept the minion's key, and you're done. You're off and running. You can just run commands and get a response back immediately on the CLI. And that kind of immediate feedback is just great. And then you can build on that iteratively. So you start building out states, you start, configuring Salt to run things on schedules or to react to events and that sort of thing. And so the whole thing is just so easy to get started with. And again, this is something we hear in the community over and over, is the other tools were really hard to get up and running with. And then, with Salt, I was it was working in minutes. Mm. And so, to build on that, Salt is such a good glue, right? We try very hard as a philosophy to not have to dictate your infrastructure. And so with these modular interfaces, with getting data into and out of Salt, we don't want to say, you know, well, you have to run a Postgres database. We don't want to say, you know, well, you've got to set this up, you've got to set that up. And so so for the small bite-sized stuff, it really is the stuff that you never hear about. And you know, if you've got some existing workflow, you know, you've got a bunch of shell scripts that you've already set up, we can work with those as first-class entities in Salt, and you don't have to rewrite them in Salt if you don't want to. If they're working for you, keep using them. You know, if it's PowerShell or if it's, you know, just regular old bash shell scripts, we can pull those into Salt, the output from those into Salt. We can distribute those using Salt, and the whole thing is just incremental, and that's one of my favorite things about having been on the professional services team is everybody's got their own infrastructure, and we can integrate with that. And I can say that with confidence without saying, well, maybe not this, maybe not that. We can do it.
Mircea, can you give us some, maybe for network engineers, some real targeted specific things that maybe they you could inspire them and be like, yeah, this would be a big win for you?
Before anything else, configuration management. This is how you can ensure and maintain consistency across your network. Salt offers some advanced templating features. I won't get very much into it, but it allows you to reuse data and to reintroduce it back in the system without much effort. But there's much more. Let's say if you want your network to notify you when or even apply configuration changes when your HP neighbors are down, or one of them. And either disable, apply a configuration change, or send an email to the guys from the other end, or detect when your interface is down because the light level optics is under the threshold. Prompt when the CPU usage is too high, or you are leaking routes, and automatically disable those neighbors' leaking routes and so on, or push high temperature notification in a chat. Another fancy thing that that I like is ChatOps. Yeah, it's very easy from a Slack or a HipChat. You can apply actions directly, being configuration changes or retrieve operation data without logging in into the system. From your chat directly, you can say, do this.
Well, that's a lot. That's all great stuff. And I think we should wrap the show here. I feel like I've been tempting fate because some of you may have noticed as I've been chatting that there's thunder rolling in the background. I don't know if you can hear that. It picked up on my mic or not, listeners. But for 90 minutes, I've been waiting for the power to go out and gotten away with it so far. So guys, let's go around the table once more. And if you would, let folks know where they can follow you, if you blog, if you've got a book you'd like to plug, anything like that you'd like to share with the community. Seth, starting with you.
Yeah, if you want to reach out to me, I'm Whiting on Twitter. It's Whiteinge. And then I also go by Whiting on Freenode. And so I'm available there. I've got a video course on Pact, if you want just a short 6-hour introduction to it, to Salt. And so that's me.
And you, Mircea?
I'm also on Twitter. It's my name, MircaUlinic. And sometimes I blog on, I write on my blog, the same, myname.net, as long as my time permits. And I'm trying to put some notes for who wants to start using Salt, but not limited to.
And yeah, you've got some great blog posts there with Salt already, which is what inspired this whole conversation to begin with. So, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and this has been the Packet Pushers Podcast. Thank you for listening today. You can find this and many more of our fine, free technical podcasts, along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and if you would, take a few minutes and rate us on iTunes. We would really appreciate that. Last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.